had they been strictly held to their one final and romantic object, that final and romantic object too many would have turned from in disgust. I will not strip these men, thought Ahab, of all hopes of cash. Aye, cash. They may scorn cash now, but let some months go by and no prospective promise of it to them, and then this same quiescent cash, all at once mutinying in them, this same cash would soon cashier Ahab. Nor was there wanting still another precautionary motive, more related to Ahab personally. Having impulsively, it is probable, and perhaps somewhat prematurely, revealed the prime but private purpose of the Pequod's voyage, Ahab was now entirely conscious that in so doing, he had indirectly laid himself open to the unanswerable charge of usurpation, and with perfect impunity, both moral and legal, his crew, if so disposed, and to that end competent, could refuse all further obedience to him, and even violently wrest from him the command. From even the barely hinted imputation of usurpation, and the possible consequences of such a suppressed impression gaining ground, Ahab must, of course, have been most anxious to protect himself. That protection could only consist in his own predominating brain and heart and hand, backed by a heedful, closely calculating attention to every minute atmospheric influence which it was possible for his crew to be subjected to. For all these reasons, then, and others perhaps too analytic to be verbally developed here, Ahab plainly saw that he must still in a good degree continue true to the natural nominal purpose of the Pequod's voyage, observe all customary usages, and not only that, but force himself to evince all his well-known passionate interest in the general pursuit of his profession. Be all this as it may, his voice was now often heard hailing the three mastheads and admonishing them to keep a bright lookout and not omit reporting even a porpoise. This vigilance was not long without reward.